Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Nicole Strickland.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
There has always been a question regarding whether or not reincarnation truly exists. Well, for my guest this evening, Nicole Strickland, that's an easy question to answer. Nicole Strickland has been interested in the supernatural since childhood. In addition to her innate psychic and empathic abilities, Nicole's experience in the fields of counseling, education, psychology, and social work give her a unique perspective on studying the unknown. Nicole is known for her gentle and humble approaches to working with the spirit realms, her clients, and the paranormal field at large. Strickland is one of the leading West Coast afterlife and paranormal researchers. She's the founder and director of the well-respected San Diego Paranormal Research Society, as well as the California coordinator to the Ghost Research Society. Nicole is also a consultant to the American Spectral Association. Nicole has a number of books under her belt, and the top three books still remain the RMS Queen Mary, Voices from Her Voyages, the Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond, The Haunted Queen of the Seas, The Living Legend of the RMS Queen Mary, and San Diego's Most Haunted, The Historical Legacy and Paranormal Marvels of America's Finest City. Nicole has been featured in a myriad of media outlets discussing her work as a paranormal researcher. We had a lot to discuss this evening, including her being a passenger on both the Titanic and also the Queen Mary. Please welcome to the show this evening, Nicole Strickland. Well, good evening, Nicole, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Dr. Kelly. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, how exciting. How exciting to have you. My goodness. Where are we talking from right now? Are we talking somewhere in California or?
You are on it. San Diego, California.
Oh, cool. And for those of you that are watching, this is going to be an interesting show tonight because we're going to learn a little bit more about not just Nicole, but some of the things she's been up to. And so sit back and grab your popcorn because here we go. So Nicole, one of the things I usually do, of course, with my guests is we establish the foundation and we evolve it forward just to see where you've been and then how your life has changed being part of a number of things that you have been involved with. So I want you to go back probably to the youngest age you can remember and tell us if you can recall whether you had some type of a paranormal experience or anything unusual that came to you where you thought, huh, this is a little odd.
Let's see, you know, like many paranormal researchers, there's that one incident or maybe several that got you interested in the paranormal. For mine, as far back as about 4 to 5 years old, I had this one odd encounter when I lived in Las Vegas, Nevada. So I was born in Huntington Beach, California, which is a little beach town about an hour north of San Diego. And then we moved to Las Vegas, my mom, dad, and I. And so it was summertime. Don't remember what month or anything. I think it was maybe July or August around there. And it was dusk. So the sun was starting to set. we were just getting out of our backyard pool and drying off, and it was my mom, dad, and I standing there, and all of a sudden I saw this. It wasn't real dark. It was like a dark gray, misty type of form start. It was floating like through us, but it started to take like this humanoid shape. Okay. And I remember, and there's so many aspects of my childhood that I don't remember, but this I do. And so I remember seeing it and watching it, and it faded as it went by us. And then I looked at my mom and dad, who were oblivious to it. And I said, "Mom, mommy, daddy, look at the draft." Now, at the age of 4 or 5 years old, I don't know why I termed what I saw draft. I don't know. Maybe I felt something. I'm not sure. But that was one incident that I remember really, really young. And then, of course, in our house, in that same house in Las Vegas, and I'm sure my parents thought, okay, well, she's 4 or 5 years old. That's the age when kids have imaginary friends and whatnot. I actually would talk and communicate to this older gentleman. And now that I'm older, I do think he probably came from maybe the 1800s, maybe the gold rush days. It was weird though, because I remember him in jeans. I'd probably different style pants, but that's just what I remember him in. And it was almost, it was an older type of clothing on top, and he was gray and had slight gray beard, and I would communicate with him off and on. He came through. And so I've always been interested in the paranormal. It's really, really odd to explain that. It's just, it's always been there. So, you know, growing up, middle school, high school, I would read books, anything I, or watch TV shows, movies, anything about paranormal aspects. And then fast forwarding to when I was in college, my senior year at the University of Arizona, my maternal grandmother, so my grandmother, Helen Lopinto, she ended up calling me the day before she passed in the afternoon. And she called and she just said, "Nicole, I just wanted to make sure everything is okay." And at the time I thought, okay, well, this is odd. You know, now I know she was going around the family and making her rounds, making sure that everyone was okay, because I really think she knew she was passing. And so I talked with her for a little bit, and then fast forward to the next day, October 25th, my mom, her daughter, of course, called me in the afternoon, and I could tell by the tone of her voice that something was wrong. And she said, "I'm so sorry, sweetie. I love you very much, but grandma passed away this morning around 4:45 a.m. So I was devastated, took the next flight out to San Diego, where both my dad's and mom's family lives, with the majority of the family anyways. And so spent a few days there with the family. And then when I came back out to Tucson, Arizona, where the U of A is, I started having these experiences in my apartment that I didn't have prior to Helen's passing. And I thought initially, okay, I'm in an upstairs apartment, you know, it's my neighbors, it's vibration, it's noise from my neighbors and whatnot. But it started with specifically the front doorknob and the doorknob to my bedroom would rattle. Mm-hmm. And I could hear the sound, and I didn't see it, but I actually knew it was those doorknobs. And I would hear it rattles if someone was trying to open it. And what's interesting is my grandmother used to go around the house at night, every night, making sure that the doors were locked, and she would do that. So I thought, okay, that's odd. I still didn't think it was her. But a couple of days later, and I've shared this story tons of times, but I love sharing it because it really got me started in the paranormal, really. So a couple of days later, I was on my bed, on my laptop, doing schoolwork, and then all of a sudden, I didn't see anything. Yeah. But all of a sudden, I felt a disembodied hand kind of caress my face. And when I felt that, it felt eerily familiar. It felt peaceful. It felt like it came from someone I really loved. That's when I started to connect the dots, mm-hmm. and ask myself, could this be Helen communicating from the other side? Or is it my grief that's causing it, you know, like a bereavement hallucination or something like that. Mm-hmm. So then again, a couple of more days, 2 or 3 more days went by after that. And then again, I was in my bedroom at night, and out of my left peripheral vision, I saw something. And when I looked, there was my grandmother's spirit form, full bodied. And it looked as though she had a very bright halo around her, as if you have a spotlight shining against her back. She looked about 10, 15 years younger. A slight smile on her face. She didn't say anything. And she was wearing one of her favorite blue and white dresses that she really liked to wear a lot. And it lasted, you know, time's a funny thing when it comes to paranormal experiences. We know that, but it seemed to play out in slow motion. I would say maybe from my perspective, maybe about 1 to 2 seconds. And then I was looking at her again. She didn't say anything, but then I saw her slowly fade away. And that's when I knew, I really felt in my heart that she was coming through. And I let my mom, of course, my mom, Norma, know, and we talked about it. And we both told Helen that the family's fine and, you know, she's free to move on wherever that needs to be. And so the experience has stopped, but it was profound for me in the sense that it fueled my interest that I've always had, but it really got me on the path of studying and researching the paranormal. And I think my grandmother knew before I did that I was almost in a way destined to be on this path. And so I credit Helen. I am so indebted to her for that. And so, and she comes by every now and then. So, but a very, very profound experience that happened. And it's one of those things that you know, when you have an experience like that, it's something that's not planned. I never in a million years would have imagined having something that profound, but it happened. So,
your grandmother, where did she actually, what state did she actually pass in?
San Diego, California. Okay. So I was in Tucson, Arizona, and mm-hmm. she passed in, for those that are familiar with San Diego, I live in Tierra Santa. And so it's central San Diego, and Kensington is a little area about maybe 10 minutes south of Tierra Santa. And so she passed in her home in Kensington. So.
Oh, okay. Cause I was trying to figure out, or maybe people are wondering, did she follow you? Did she attach to you? Because if she passed away in one place here, how did she manage to get herself to show you in another location unless she may have attached to you? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. My experiences, the first of the experiences that I can recall happened, I would say I had to get back to Tucson. So it would have been about 5 or 6 days after, give or take, after her passing. So I thought, well, maybe is it some sort of crisis, sort of apparition? But it's like, for me, it's like the days would have been too many days would have passed. I don't know. I don't know if maybe she just garnered enough energy to make herself known. I think that she probably knew that out of all the family that I would understand it and I would be able to process it. I've always been a very inquisitive, curious, very intuitive child. And so I think she perhaps knew that about myself before I knew it. Mm-hmm. And I think she knew in some way or another that I would understand that experience a little bit. Obviously, I understand it more now, and would share it with the family. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of, but you bring up a good point. No one's ever actually asked me that. So it's really hard to know.
Well, one of the things about that is, was it your grandmother that looked younger in age? I cannot remember.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, about 10 or 15 years younger.
Yep. And at some point, I will be sharing with you, Nicole, like I have with practically the world right now, a picture that I shot of accidentally after a storm ripped through my grandparents' place, of a young gal and an older man that were watching me from a screened window. And they both showed younger than what they were. In fact, the reason why I brought this up, because the young gal actually passed away. This is how I learned to be that I was telepathic, because once I discovered on my print film that looked like a ball in this window, I thought, oh, this is very odd. And the ball get up in this window and no one can get into the house because it's locked. And then I that was when I got my first laptop and I blew up the image and I said, it's not a ball. It's actually the head of a little girl. Well, the little girl passed away 2 miles down the road, and she was traveling with what I believe to be, it was either her doctor, who was devastated upon her death, or it was my great grandfather, her father, which was with her. But telepathically, when I went back and I stood and I just stared at that window, I said, you showed to me for some reason, and they've never showed to anyone else in my family. I am right. I guess I don't want to say I'm the chosen one, but I'm kind of the chosen one. And so the message was, and this is why I learned I was telepathic, was the genealogy's wrong. I'm not Lily. My name is Mary. And so when I went and I went back to the research, yeah. And then push came to shove. She was right. I matched her with another picture. I said, yep, this is the same girl. That obviously is either my grandfather, great grandfather, or whatever. But that's why I asked about the age, because sometimes they'll show themselves younger. What is your, I know what my thoughts are, but what are your thoughts about those individuals and why they show themselves younger?
Yeah, this is something I've thought a lot about. I have different thoughts about it. Perhaps maybe that was a time in their life that maybe was very important to them, or maybe they were most happy. Yeah. Maybe it's a time where they know that I would remember them the most. Maybe it's an energy thing. Maybe it's easier to come through being younger. And I mean, I have all these different thoughts, but mm-hmm. I think specifically speaking about my grandmother, I think she came through being younger because she wanted me to remember her in a vibrant sense when she was more alive, free from pain and illness and all of that. That's just my thought. But I don't know if it differs with people. You know, it might be just different with one person versus another. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, those are the most common theories. That's right. Like when the gal passed, I mean, she was sick at the at an older age, and she probably looked pretty bad. So she wanted to be in her more spirited, happy, more energetic type of being. And same with my great grandfather, same type of thing. And at a conference that I just was at and spoke at, there was a gentleman there who gave a speech on why aren't there any fat ghosts, and so that was very fascinating.
Yes, absolutely.
Because most ghosts or apparitions, most, not all, seem to show themselves unless it was a time where people would recognize them in a particular important form that they were in. Wanted to show themselves as a more thinner, energetic, probably felt better during that thing too. So that was a fascinating topic on why aren't there, when we see apparitions or whatever, why aren't they fat? You know, why are they seem to be slimmed down? But it just all depends. It depends on all that. So now that you've had some of these experiences under your belt, did you ever go back and ask or talk to your mother or dad about whether or not others in your family had these types of gifts before, obviously, you and them?
Yes. And yes. So I've asked both parts of the family, and it seems to be that really no one, if they do, they're not vocal about it, or maybe they're not aware of it. Now, I will say that I forgot to mention this, and this will kind of tie things up a little bit. My grandmother said she was born with a veil. So, you know, a type of NCAL, it's that type of NCAL birth where I think it's the amnio. I forget if it's the amniotic sac is thinner or something, but she had that type of birth. And so I think that in her way of saying that, she was saying that's probably why I'm so intuitive. My grandmother was very in touch with her sensitive side, very in touch with her intuition. There would be times, and not just with my mom or me, it would be other members of the family. She would call them up and say, what's wrong? What happened? Mm-hmm. And then we'd be like, what? How do you know this? How did you know this happened? So she was very intuitive. So I think it passed down through the maternal line. My mom has it. She knows she has it, but she's not as open to it, I should say. But as far as other family members, you know, I think my dad has it a little bit too. We all do. Just some people are just obviously more in tune to it or more practiced at it than others. But as far as my cousins or aunts and uncles, no, they're like, nope, I don't know. So,
or in denial, or they're very logical side of the brain. I know that I was talking with a woman at the conference, and she was like, you know, I've tried to tell people about my stories. I really have, but they just don't want to listen to me. They just don't believe me. Yeah. They think I'm a little kooky. And I finally had to just put on my little stern little voice here. And I looked right at her and I said, don't expect to convince a skeptic ever. I mean, even my own friends and my own family don't believe half the stuff that I go through to this day. But to me, the stuff that, and you, the stuff we go through is very real. And it's not like, you know, we're tripping or anything. It's just that we're, but then all of a sudden, don't you ever find that then it brings up more questions about, you know, what could have happened out there? And then you want to kind of go further and it just leads you to another question. Have you ever found?
Oh, absolutely. All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And some people are just more cerebral than others and whatnot. But I don't know. I find that more and more people are more comfortable opening up to their experiences versus maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, geez. 20, 30 years ago.
You know?
Yeah. And I have that extra 20 on your age. But the thing is back in my day, the Ouija board was where it all began. It began, didn't begin with anything else. We didn't have equipment back in my day. And so the Ouija board was, wasn't looked at as being as terrible as what a lot of people say about the Ouija board experience now. And again, it depends on how trained you are in using one and knowing how to open and close it properly, if you can do that. But which leads
that's a good point.
How about investigations? So you've done quite a few investigations, and think about a few that you've done that really kind of amazed you, put you back for a moment, and you had to ask a question, then ask another question. There's got to be several that you've been involved in. Can you think of one off the bat?
Yeah, there. I mean, we do obviously investigations at private residences. We're very selective in that arena. That's a whole different discussion as to why we do business and, of course, historical cases. The private residence cases where we've been able to have, whether it's personal experiences as well as captured data, audio, specifically audio in these examples, where we present that to the client and they're, and there's been two or three cases of this where we present it, they listen, and their whole body language changes. They either start crying or you can tell in their demeanor that they're just shocked. And usually they'll be like, oh my gosh, that was my husband. Oh my gosh, you know, that was my grandmother. They're able to recognize the voices. And I know the whole thing about how spirit vocalization's coming through. It may sound like someone you know, but maybe it's not. But just very, 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 they're able to so easily recognize it. Mm-hmm. And it gives them a sense of peace and comfort. So those types of cases are really, really endearing for us as well. Another one that's kind of on the other end of the spectrum, I'm going to bring it up just because it reminds us all to be safe and to have those, you know, emergency protocols in place. We were at, I'm like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said it just because it's still a functioning restaurant. It's a restaurant in Oceanside, which is about 30 minutes north of San Diego. And we were doing an investigation there, six of us, two teams of three. And so I was in the downstairs bar area and the other team was upstairs. And this particular restaurant was built on top of a Indian burial type of ground there, right off the 5 freeway. I'm sure a lot of you that are familiar with San Diego will know what I'm talking about. But anyways, we were about an hour into the investigation, and then one of the investigators radios us, and I'm the one that had the two-way radio, and she said, stay where you are, this place has just been robbed. So what ended up happening is two armed men with guns came through the kitchen. And so the police came, we're talking helicopter, three or four cop cars, a canine. So we were told just stay where you are. And then of course we were there about 2 hours because we didn't know if the police wanted to talk with us. They ended up not, but we showed them, okay, we have written permission to be here and all of that. But it's okay, this isn't really paranormal per se, but it goes to show, I mean, that could have been tragic, right? Yeah. So it's something that I like to bring up just because, you know, you think about safety and all of that. And sometimes it's, you forget how important that is on investigations.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I bring up too, yeah, that's an excellent point. Even people who want to wander out by themselves, or even if they're in pairs and then they end up falling into a hole, breaking their ankle or hurting themselves to the point where they need help getting out of something. I know that in the house that I shot that photograph, we had no trespassing signs all over that thing because the house in and of itself was 120 years old and it was rotting. Wow. Yeah. And so it was like any, but I've also worked in law, and I know that this is going to sound absolutely bizarre to people, but even if they're trespassing, if they get hurt on a property that they shouldn't be on anyway, you won't believe this, but it's true. They can actually turn around and sue you. And so, to keep people that aren't supposed to be there to begin with off your property, because they could turn around and actually collect damages from you, it's kind of mind blowing. But
It's absolutely mind blowing. There was another story. One of my colleagues here in Orange County, I guess they went on, I forget where they were, but I don't know if they didn't scout it out during the day, but they were outside and she fell and broke her ankle. Mm-hmm. So just little things like that can happen. Another case too, that in a way is very tragic. And we had gone twice to this house. It was a house out in Alpine, California. That's East County, about half hour east of San Diego. And it was a family of four, young girl. He was maybe 10 or 11, and the young girl was maybe about 6 or 7. We had done a couple of different investigations at the property. And the second night we were there, and the family gave us permission. Someone, I believe, was on site, but the father and the two children were coming home in their truck and sadly got into an accident, and the young girl passed away.
Oh, dear.
And we were there at the house when this was coming out. And so that, you never know when something like this may happen. And so it was hard to get over that. I mean, that whole next week at work, I felt so bad. I felt so bad for that family.
And so it's these types of things that do happen. And the other thing that can happen too is when people want to go running around in not necessarily always basements, but in places where there might be some of these invisible or odorless type gases. And that's another thing too, because people are like, oh, I can just go down in this crawl space or whatever. Next thing you know it, they're passed out because they've been gassed to death. And so it's always a good idea. Now in my case, and the minute you mentioned Las Vegas, in the beginning here, I know I heard most of my audience go, oh no, don't say it, don't do it. I was attacked in Zach Bagans' museum and I shut it down for 8 minutes. And so I go into trances very easy. And I've been, Las Vegas is my second home. And so I'm there to.
I lived there for 6 years. So I that's awesome. Sorry.
Yep. And no, but that was, I was going to say, not to interrupt on you, but I was going to say, when you were talking about your story, I was starting to visualize a part of town that you might have lived in or whatever, because it's like I'm there so much and I have so many experiences when I'm there, even by myself, and not always good ones either, by the way. And these are in hotel rooms. It's quite a place that really lights up at night. And you would be very familiar, obviously, with the Pioneer Saloon out there. And that was, we had a major night when I was on a tour where there's major attacks on that one, including I got a lot of attachments on me out there. And it was just very interesting. But speaking of attachments, even from San Diego, I had a couple there. I can't remember their name right now. I had them on my show a few years back, who had to remove from me 16 attachments and didn't move them remotely, where I had a very unusual kind of experience. They didn't tell me when it was going to happen, but I knew when it happened. But that's interesting, because that couple, they live in San Diego. So
interesting. Yeah. Vegas is an interesting city though, because you have the different layers, you have the history, you have the geology, but just getting into the EMF theories and all of that, there's so much of that in Las Vegas, and there's so many people there, and even all the alcohol and the drinking. And so the inhibitions are lowered and all of that. So I think it plays into a lot.
Yeah.
Vegas is Yeah.
It's quite a place.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And I'm now, because I was a kid when I lived there, mm-hmm. and off, I believe it was off Tropicana and forget the street perpendicular to Tropicana, but we lived on a street called Pepper Mill. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It was not near this, not too far from the strip, but maybe about 3 miles west of the strip. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, as an adult, I can go there for 2 or 3 days and I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah. I'm good. Well, the energy there and the types of energies that it also brings in there. And the one thing that I hate every time I'm there by myself is that, of course, one of the number one suicides that occurs in Las Vegas are with women who go there. They're lonely, they're depressed and whatever, and they kill themselves in these hotel rooms.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When I'm there by myself, you have no idea how I get kind of I get kind of questioned. You here with anybody and all this, and it's like, yep, I'm here writing my books, and because again, you've seen it, you've seen the reports. You know, suicide. It's the number one place in all of America and probably the world where people go and they end their life in a hotel room. So
I know they gamble all their life savings away. I mean, I've seen it just in casinos here. I mean, they're sitting there eating, no offense, but you know, but money in these, like,
I know,
off and on just for hours, just put, okay, $20, $100, $20. That's insane.
I know. Yeah.
It's fun, but limit yourself.
Well, I wish I could explain how I win 19 jackpots, IRS jackpots out of 24 times of going to a casino. But the thing is I have this thing with, being a very, when I'm very low energy and I'm kind of in a trance type state of being or whatever, for some reason I can always go and pick out the winning machine. And I've talked about this often on my shows and stuff too. I predicted the last three Kentucky Derby winners. I can predict plays. Yeah. Because I go into, and I was going to ask you about this early on here. Mm-hmm. What types of gifts do you have, because I'm finally being able to identify mine and understand them better when I have an experience. What kind of gifts do you have?
That's an interesting question. And I don't share this a lot just because, you know, some people may be like, why are you sharing it? But now that you ask, and you know, as you're in, and I'm going to preface this by saying, as you're involved in this field and you're working with energy, it's, you know, no doubt that your senses will naturally develop, even that sixth sense. I've noticed that with myself, intuition just naturally developing, being more in touch with the channeling and all of that, past lives and whatnot. Yep. Now, this is something that maybe I've had all along and maybe just didn't know about it or wasn't aware of it. I, remote viewing, and I don't advertise myself as a psychic medium. Really, I think we all are. We all have the capacity for it. I don't advertise myself as one, but I do my work. I do work intuitively a lot. And for some reason, and I just want to talk about this in a very general way because it is a delicate subject, remote viewing and being able to pinpoint where missing people, specifically females, specifically young females, being able to pinpoint where the remains are and what happened to them. And I've done that on a few cases with almost uncanny precision. Like it's just, I don't even want to question it, but it's so that is one. And then just really in tune with the weather a lot. I think we all are, but it's just all my life. I can sense when a thunderstorm is coming or earthquakes. You know, there have been many times where I'm like, okay, an earthquake's going to happen. And there it does. It occurs. So, you know, I don't know, but it's a delicate thing.
Mm-hmm. When I was 4 or 5 years old, and of course, keep in mind, it's taken me this long to figure myself out. I used to have dreams, and these dreams would, make me into like a little 4-year-old visionary, because the next day I would see what was in my dream, which was always terrible. Airplane crashes, assassinations, civil unrest, stuff like that. I would see it on the box black and white television that I grew up with.
Oh, wow.
And and when you rewatch this program, when you air, the first 2 minutes of it will be my life story in 2 minutes. And you're going to see me in that story very quickly. And so, but when you're a child and you have these things happening to you, or you say, wow, that's very kind of weird. I just dreamt of that. And you say mm-hmm. it about four or five times, that I thought I was actually causing these things to occur by just dreaming about them, and then all of a sudden they would happen. So I always learn how to shut it off. Have you ever wanted to shut some of your gifts down because they were becoming a little bit too empowering? Not empowering, that's not the right word, bothering, you know, being a bother.
Right. That's a good question. I used to be, because that was when I was at a part where it was harder for me to differentiate between something I'm sensing from someone else versus my own. Now that I'm better at differentiating the difference, I don't say, okay, I want to shut it down. I welcome it. So, but you know, obviously in the past when I wasn't as developed with it, then yes. But dreams is another one. I forgot to mention that. Very lucid. I think a lot of us in the paranormal often dream very lucidly. And speaking of dreams, now I've had all kinds of animals, dogs, cats throughout my life. I'll keep this short, but my Kaylee, she was 18 and a half years old. Her brother was Max, who passed away in 2016. She passed away December 19th, 2021. And I've never had this with any other animal or human, but for some reason, I don't even want to question it. My analytical mind tries to, and I try to shut that off. But I've had about 22 very profound dream visitations with Kaylee. We're talking about the same environment as when I go to sleep, same lighting. I'm laying in my bed as I really am laying in bed. And Kaylee will come to me. I'll feel her jump on the bed. I'll see her. I'll hear her meow. I'm able to feel her fur and it's warm. I've even been able to feel her heartbeat. It's like as if she's really there. So I don't know if it's something where she's slightly coming to my level, and maybe I'm slightly astrally projecting out and we somehow are meeting in the middle. But it's so profound. And it's just, and they're getting longer in duration. Mm-hmm. And it's very quickly to summarize this, the last one that occurred about maybe 2 weeks ago, in this dream visitation, she was sitting on my chest mm-hmm. and I was laying in bed. And then all of a sudden I saw her head perk up and she looked toward my bathroom door, which was in front of the end of my bed. And I saw her head turn toward the door, and there was a bright light in front of her. So it made her head look like silhouetted in black, and I saw her perk up, stand up on my chest, and she darted through that white light, and then I woke up. Mm-hmm. And it's just these are I don't even want to question them. They're so beautiful and profound.
Or have you ever had the footprints that have come to your door out in a snowstorm, and there's footprints there, but there's no footprints that actually show that it went away anywhere?
I can hear, like, that's you brought that, I forgot to mention. Oh yeah, it's a daily experience in this house.
Yeah.
Because there, you know, five cats so far have passed away in this house, sadly. And so, yeah, we'll hear the little clackety clack of the nails and whatnot, mm-hmm. or coming down the stairs. Sometimes I'll see peripherally them, you know, walking around and whatnot.
But how many animals do you have in your house right now?
Just one, and we have a 22 and a half. She's going to be 23 in March.
Oh my goodness.
And that's Aries. She's a cat. She's a gray and white cat.
Mm-hmm. So, does she react to your environment when something else might be there?
I think she does. Specifically her two brothers that passed 2 weeks apart back in 2018. Mm-hmm. I will see her staring, just sitting there staring. And I don't know if she's just in a trance, but I do think she can connect with them. Even mm-hmm. my two cats, Max and Kaylee, as well. So yeah, totally. They're so intuitive and so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Very sentient beings.
Let's talk about your sensitivity here. Something that was very interesting that I read about you, and I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to have you take the paddle here and bring us forward. The Queen Mary, there seems to be some kind of a connection with you and the Queen Mary. And I want you to just kind of tell people a little bit about the background where this all began and where you think this is all coming from.
So I'll start, and it's one of those things. I've even had past life regressionists reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, you have a past life with the Queen Mary. Oh my gosh, you're maybe one of the energies on board. Now, I have a past life with the Titanic. I was on board the Titanic, I believe, as a second class passenger. I was in the lifeboat, and I saw the ship sink. And I've even had very profound past life recall moments regarding the Titanic, like, for example, hearing sounds that I heard in my past life of the ship sinking and whatnot. There have been a couple of occasions where I will start sobbing when I hear these sounds and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So there is that connection there with the Titanic. I do think that plays into my love for the Queen Mary. There might be something else, but my first introduction to the Queen Mary was in the year 2000. So still in college, of course. And then we came back out here for spring break to go on a Carnival cruise for 3 days. And so my first introduction to the Queen Mary was from the backseat of a car. And I just remember looking at the ship and I was like, oh my God, I will be back there someday. It was just right there. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to come here. So then fast forward to 2005, that's when I first stepped on board. Very hard to describe. I try to do it in my books about the ship. But the second I stepped on board and my feet were actually on board the ship, I felt at home. I felt at peace. I felt everything about it was familiar to me, as if I had been there before. And it just felt It was like an instant soul connection to the ship. And what's interesting is in my research over the years, I've talked to former crew. I've talked to World War II servicemen that sailed on board, veterans, I mean, war brides. I'm good friends with a war bride. Her name's June Allen. And these people, some of these people too say that they too have this connection to the ship. And Captain John Treasure Jones, he actually brought the Queen Mary into Long Beach December 9th, 1967 for retirement. And he said that the Queen Mary was as closest to a human being of any ship that he's ever commanded. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's something very sentient about the Queen Mary. I do think the ship is sentient. I think she's very much alive. So I think that there's this interplay between her as one big sentient entity and her resident spirit. Some of them stay, some may come through and stay for a while and pass. But I think there's that. But I think June even said this too. June Allen said, we were standing there on board one day and she said, you know, and she was a war bride. And she said, the ship chooses you. The ship can tell the people that can really tap into her mm-hmm. tapestry and can tap into her soul. And she chooses those people. Mm-hmm. That was June Allen's words. So it's not just me, but I'm still exploring the reason why. And maybe I'll never know, but there's definitely some sort of connection there.
When you were regressed on this, how successful were they? Could you tell what you were back then?
Yeah, no, I haven't actually been regressed by them. I had, to date, three past life regressionists just contact me. And just based on my books or based on some of the posts I talk about on the Queen Mary, they've said, wow, you have a connection to the ship. Hmm. Two said that I was a nurse on board. Maybe, maybe not. The other one wasn't sure. I even had another a psychic medium and past life regressionist who no way would have known this because I don't share this that often, but he felt that I was one of the spirits on board the ship. Mm-hmm. In a past life, that spirit was me in a past life. I don't know, but it's, you know, I should get regressed mm-hmm. Just to see what comes of it.
When you're on that ship, is there any one area that you feel more like at home, at peace? Like, yeah, this is where I've been, to identify it, because it's a big ship.
And it's a huge ship. We're talking, 1,019.5 feet here.
Yeah.
Now, the first time I stepped on board, I actually went on A deck, and that's one of the hotel decks. And so I stepped on board port side A deck where the hotel lobby is. And that's where I first had that sensation of, oh my gosh, this is home. I've been here before.
Right.
An instantaneous soul connection to the ship, if that makes sense. There are, oh gosh, there are a lot of favorite areas, but I'm very drawn to the former first and third class pool, as well as the aft engine room. But there are two energies associated with those areas. I mean, not just those areas, but those areas, you can't talk about them without talking about these,
right,
these energies that, that I know, you know, they're both intelligent and I've interacted with them throughout the years. So it could be partly because of that. But those two, for some reason, ring a bell. I'm trying to think of other lesser known. Yeah, pretty much the entire ship, really. But those two areas, for some reason, I seem to be drawn to.
Have you ever been attacked? And when I mean attacked, I'm talking about put in a trance, starting to talk like somebody of the past there. Have you ever made a connection with any kind of apparition there that recognizes you? Because I take it you've gone back more than once.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you live there, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's my second home, really.
So do these same apparitions come to you?
There's quite a few there. I mean, according to Peter James, the late resident psychic there, he's no longer with us anymore in this life. I think he said in his thought that there were about 600 plus energies there. There seems to be a cluster of ones that are a little bit more social, a little bit more interactive, and so people have more encounters with them. Now, interestingly, when I go on board, and this doesn't happen every single time, but it happens enough.
Yeah.
And whether I go on our deck or I go on promenade or I step on A deck, and it's usually within the first 5 to 10 minutes of me being on board, I will hear both male and female, younger, older, whisper saying, "Hi, Nicole," or I'll hear, "Nicole's here." And I mean, trust me, I'm very meticulous. I look around. I'm like, okay, is this someone else? Is there some other Nicole here? Is there another person? And when this happens, there, I can't explain it. Mm-hmm. So, but gosh, it's hard to know. I think there's a cluster of a few that come through more often. I will say Jackie, a lot of you probably know who she is. The little girl that was actually coined by Peter James and I forget if it was the early 90s or late 90s. For some reason, she comes to me a lot. I mean, I interact with her a lot. She's been one of the energies there that throughout the years is we've gotten to know each other. Mm-hmm. So I'm very drawn to her. Many people are. And at first it was weird with her because think about the scores of people going in and out of that ship every day, wanting to experience a paranormal event, wanting to go on a haunted tour, wanting to investigate. Mm-hmm. I think there's some psychokinetic interplay going on where people might, in some cases, be creating
Correct.
The energy just because of what they want to experience. Right. So I often, in the early years, I thought, is Jackie even real? Or is she some sort of psychokinetic creation? Possibly there might be two Jackies on board, one that is created by the scores of people going in, but you know, no one has been able to pinpoint her origins. There was a something online saying, okay, her last name is Torin. That has not been able to be verified. I haven't been able to verify it. So there's really no origins. Peter James thought perhaps she passed away in the second class pool, which is no longer there. We just don't know, but I do think she's real. Could there be a created version of her also on board? I don't know. Mm-hmm. So,
cause you harm rather than help you. You might be able to get down to at least a name, and then you could research
exactly
see if that name was on board, right?
Absolutely. That makes sense. And I am so glad you brought up tulpas, because I think tulpas should absolutely be a classification of energy.
Yeah.
I have a whole presentation on tulpas.
Oh, cool.
It's something we absolutely need to explore more in this field.
Yeah.
Because I think it could really explain a lot.
Just the idea that you're in one of the boats and stuff. Do you know offhand if you were someone that was down in, what was it, like the
steerage?
People? Yeah.
Or, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought you were talking about third class.
Yeah. Did you ever get that figured out?
Yeah, no. There's parts about it that I'm pretty confident it is what it is, and there's other parts that are blurry for me. I do believe I was second class. Okay. And was in one of the lifeboats. I'm recalling from that life, starboard side of the ship, slightly forward of the ship, and I had the view of looking back at the ship a little bit behind us, maybe not much, but starboard side, forward part of the Titanic. I remember it going down. I remember the sounds, the cold air, the stars. And of course, a lot of people will, the movie displays that. No. Even prior to all the movie coming out, I could recall that entire event when the ship started sinking. Now, what's interesting is the other aspects of my time on board are blurry, but I will say that before I actually, or let me say this, when I would see certain aspects of the inner parts of the ship, certain parts would, I would be like, oh my gosh, I've been there. They were so familiar and I can completely remember being in those rooms. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing. I would love to find out maybe who I was. Mm-hmm. I do believe I was female, of course. Second class, perhaps maybe third, but I'm getting more second class. I would love to figure that out. Maybe my name was someone with something with starting with an H, perhaps that comes through. But again, you know, I don't know. So, but I would love to delve more into that. And it's speaking of past life regression, I've often wondered, is it better to get regressed by someone you don't know versus someone you do know? I mean, there's benefit. I could see benefits and cons to both.
Did you ever do a genealogy on yourself where you could connect yourself to someone that was on the Titanic?
You know, very briefly, and there were a couple relatives way back that we had, of course, that were crew members, but steerage, worked in the steerage area.
That's interesting.
So that is something we fit. Yes. And so I'm like, okay, maybe a correlation there. I don't know.
Well, let's add to that a little bit.
Yeah.
So have you ever been asked the question, because I know I've done a paper on this. I wrote an article. I don't know which magazine it ended up in right now. It's one of two, but trauma. Now, keep in mind, that was an awfully traumatizing experience.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
To the point where you would never, ever, if it came up your genealogical line, your genetics, mm-hmm. Have you ever been through trauma to a degree that it shocked you so much? I mean, literally. And that could be one of them. By the way, traumatic experiences do go back 7 to 14 generations.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can end up with a gene that somehow has memory to whatever you experienced there. I'm glad you discovered that you found that there was a connection to somebody on the Titanic.
There's absolutely. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, I come from, I'm mostly Italian, but I do have Irish in me too. So that can be a part of it. Mm-hmm. I even had, what's interesting, I had, you know, we've all had therapy, I'm sure, throughout our lives. And there was this one point in my life where I was having therapy. And the therapist was like, you know, there's something with you and water. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was like, oh boy, she's, but I didn't tell her what it was. I said, yes. And it's interesting because as a young child, I was afraid of the water, but yet I learned to swim very competently when I was 2 years old.
Oh my.
But I was always very drawn to the water, but yet, now, some people can say, well, yeah, no one likes cold water. No, I could not be around cold water. But now that I know where that stems from,
oh, there
obviously
you go.
It's easier, right? But there's certain aspects of my life in this life where I can see that maybe that stems from the Titanic. Mm-hmm. Maybe the, for example, survivor's guilt, horrible. And we all, I think, have it to certain degrees, but horrible. And so maybe that stems from that. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely worth exploring further, though.
Have you ever had any other types of traumatic experiences? Like you mentioned it very early on in this interview that once you start getting into your awareness or your intuition, and you become more open, you somehow expand, mm-hmm. and things just keep opening up like a flower. Where there's a lot
they do,
of individuals
right.
that are so closed that you couldn't open up that if you even tried to pry it open, right? So you've obviously have come into, have you had further training in what you do to allow yourself to be even come even more open?
No, I have not. It's just something that's just developed evolving. Naturally. Yep. It's developing naturally. My brain wants to analyze it, but I'm, you know what? I'm just allowing it to develop naturally, mm-hmm. I guess. So
yeah, I'm the same way. It's just when I want to shut it down, I can't shut it down. I just can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can try to understand how to kind of block some things, right?
Absolutely. Well, of course, yeah. And I think when you get into heavy channeling or you have moments like that where you're really, really in tune with that side of yourself, it's almost like, well, maybe it's meant for it to come at that point in time,
right.
Maybe.
Right.
You know, again, it's that the brain, the logical side of the brain is always trying to figure it out. Well, why? But maybe we don't know the why.
Yeah.
Maybe we will never know the why. I don't know. But yeah, it's just, you know, let it develop naturally. That's just what seemed to work for me. So
tell people how they can find your books or which ones you might recommend. Take it from there.
Absolutely. So of course I have three on the Queen Mary, right? That's not a surprise. So two are paranormal, historical based. The other is purely historical. So the Haunted Queen of the Seas, The Living Legend of the RMS Queen Mary, that is a historical and paranormal overview of the ship, basically. And then a sister book to that is Spirited Queen Mary, Her Haunted Legend. That delves more into the paranormal hotspots aboard the ship, more about the personalities and some of my experiences with her resident energies, of course. And then pretty much a culmination of all of my experiences and some evidence that I've captured over the years up until the point of writing that book. And then RMS Queen Mary Voices from Her Voyages, that took about 2 to 2.5 years to do because I had to interview former crew, former passengers, World War II veterans, even war brides. And it's a collection of their sailing accounts and memories from sailing on board the Queen Mary. And so I got special permission from various resources as well to republish a few stories in there as well. So those were all joys to write. They are sold aboard the Queen Mary. They do very well there, which is great. There's a lot of different ocean liner books on board the Queen Mary, which is awesome. And then all of my books can be purchased on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, you know, all of those places. San Diego's Most Haunted. It's a collection of about 25 to 27 different historical locations throughout San Diego. So again, historical, paranormal overview of those locations. Spirits of Rancho Buena Vista Adobe, that's about the history and pretty much our tenure, I should say, at the Adobe, doing our Spirits of the Adobe tours. And then, of course, Private Investigations. It's an old land rancho that's in Vista, California. Mm-hmm. And then my very, very first book, spanning going back to 2009, my gosh, I took it out of print because I want to redo it and add more locations. That was Field Guide to Southern California Hauntings. And then, of course, I have a little ebook devoted to my cats, Max and Kaylee, that's on Amazon. Max and Kaylee, two remarkable felines, I believe, I'm forgetting the subtitle of the book, Forever Imprinted on My Heart, I think is the subtitle. And then, of course, The Afterlife Chronicles, exploring the connection between life, death, and beyond. That just came out recently as well. I'm going to make that into an audio book. I actually developed my own imprint, Kaylee Max Books, after my cats. And so that was published under that imprint. So hoping to get it out on audiobook as well. And then, of course, we're working on myself as well as Marie D. Jones and Denise Agnew. We're working on an anthology titled Women on the Fringe, Groundbreaking Women in the Paranormal. So it's all about women and their work in the paranormal field. So I believe we might be doing, I'm not sure, we might be doing a second volume on that. So at some point, so that's pretty much it.
Wow.
With the books, you know, I'm all about quality over quantity. That's just with me, you know. So, but
thank you so much for being with us this evening.